Welcome back for another deep dive. You guys have given us some seriously interesting stuff to think about this time around. This time we're tackling the book of Genesis,
Oh, wow.
the first two chapters, actually, where it all begins, really, literally.
Yeah, absolutely.
We've got excerpts from a lecture by Dr. Elaine Phillips, who's a well-respected scholar of the Old Testament. And today we're going to dive into the different ways that people interpret the creation narrative, especially with everything we know from science now. It makes things pretty interesting.
It really is remarkable how these opening chapters have had such a huge impact on, Western thought. It really lays the groundwork for so much that comes after.
Absolutely. And one of the first things that jumped out at me reading through Dr. Phillips' lecture was how Genesis 1 reads like a poem almost, beautifully structured,
It
you know,
is.
with a 7-day framework. It paints a very different picture of creation, I think, than some of the other ancient myths that are out
Oh,
there.
for sure. You take the Babylonian creation myth, the Enuma Elish, it's full of warring gods and just like crazy violence. Genesis is completely different. It shows creation as this intentional act, this orderly act by God.
It's almost like comparing like a carefully composed symphony to like a jam session, right?
Okay.
Where it's just whatever happens, happens. But the structure in Genesis 1, I think, really highlights the idea of purpose, you know, like divine intention behind creation.
Absolutely. And that structure, it's not just a chronological account. It's a theological poem revealing God's character and how good creation is.
Now, let's talk about the days of creation, because I think this is where things get pretty interesting. Dr. Phillips points out that the Hebrew word yom doesn't always mean a literal 24-hour day,
Really?
right? It can also refer to longer, undefined periods of time, almost like, you know, chapters in Earth's history.
Yeah, that's super important because it means you don't have to choose between a literal reading of Genesis and all the scientific evidence we have now for an old Earth. There's room for both.
So how do we even begin to reconcile these ancient texts with all the scientific data that we have? I mean, it's just an overwhelming amount.
Well, Dr. Phillips doesn't shy away from science at all.
Right.
She actually brings up these really fascinating examples, like the Green River formations in Wyoming.
Okay.
They show evidence of, 7.5 million years of sedimentation,
Oh.
which pretty much definitively indicates that the Earth is way older than just a few thousand years.
7.5 million years. It's crazy to think about the huge scale of geologic time, isn't it?
It is.
Then you've got the age of the universe itself, which I think is estimated to be over 13 billion years old based on things like the speed of light and the expanding universe.
Right, and all these discoveries paint this picture of an ancient universe and a changing universe. It definitely challenges that traditional young Earth creationist perspective.
So, I mean, are we stuck having to choose between science and faith?
Not at all. Dr. Phillips actually lays out a whole spectrum of viewpoints that try to bridge the gap between faith and science. One of those is theistic evolution.
Okay, so theistic evolution basically says that God created the universe and then used evolution as the process to create all the diversity of life that we see today. It's kind of acknowledging the science, but still affirming God's role as the ultimate creator.
Exactly. And then you've got different forms of creationism which emphasize God being more directly involved
Right.
in creation, like to different degrees.
For example, you've got progressive creationism, which acknowledges the old earth, but sees God kind of intervening at certain points to make new life forms.
And the framework hypothesis, which is more focused on the theological message of
Andrea,
Genesis, saying that the order, the structure of creation, reveals God's power and that the days aren't meant to be taken literally as 24-hour periods.
And then, of course, you have young earth creationism, which says that God created the world in 6 literal 24-hour days. And any scientific evidence to the contrary is either misinterpreted or evidence of like an apparent age that God built into the creation, which is kind of a tricky idea, isn't it?
It is. But, what's important is that you, as the listener, understand all these different viewpoints and how they approach the biblical text and the scientific evidence.
It seems like it's less about finding like a one-size-fits-all answer, and more about thoughtfully considering all of these complex ideas and forming your own informed conclusions.
Absolutely. And Dr. Phillips actually identifies at least 53 different interpretations of Genesis.
Oh, wow.
So 53. Yeah, there are a lot of options out there.
I think everyone could find at least one that resonates with them.
Exactly. And it's important to remember that within Christianity, there's room for this respectful dialogue and diverse viewpoints when it comes to understanding Genesis.
Now, speaking of different viewpoints, Dr. Phillips also brings up something that I thought was really intriguing, and that's the different names used for God in Genesis chapters 1 and 2.
Yeah, this is fascinating. You see this shift from Elohim,
right,
which emphasizes God's transcendence and power, to Yahweh,
mm-hmm,
which is God's personal covenant name associated with relationship and intimacy.
Yeah, it's just like we see these two sides of the same coin, you know?
Yeah.
God is the creator of the universe, and God is the one who, you know, walks with humanity in the garden.
And isn't it interesting that the serpent in Genesis chapter 3 only uses Elohim?
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's like he recognizes God's power,
mm-hmm,
but doesn't get the depth of God's personal nature, his love for humanity.
That is a subtle but powerful detail.
Right. It makes you wonder.
It does. It leads us really nicely into another important concept here, humanity being created in the image of God.
Yes.
We actually had a great question come in from one of our listeners about this. What does it actually mean to be made in the image of God?
Well, Dr. Phillips explains that in the ancient Near East, the idea of image was usually linked to function and purpose.
Okay.
Not a physical resemblance.
So Adam and Eve, being God's image bearers, were created to represent him in the world. They were tasked with, you know, ruling over creation, caring for it, reflecting God's character.
Exactly. They were given dominion over the earth,
right,
and trusted with taking care of its resources,
yeah,
and cultivating its potential.
It's like God appointed them caretakers of this incredible creation.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah.
It's this beautiful and profound idea,
mm-hmm,
that has shaped how we understand human dignity and responsibility for centuries.
It really has.
Yeah.
It really has. And this idea of function that you brought up is really interesting when we consider the creation of Eve. She's described as an Ezer Kenegdo for Adam. And I gotta admit, I'm not familiar with that term. What does that mean exactly?
It's often translated as helper, but it doesn't really capture the full meaning. Ezer is actually used in other parts of the Old Testament to describe God himself as a helper to Israel.
Oh, so it's not implying a subordinate role.
Right. Right. No, not at all. More like a role of strength, partnership.
Right.
And kenegdo means opposite him.
Okay.
It suggests this equality, this complementarity.
Mm-hmm.
Eve is not an afterthought. She's absolutely essential to God's plan for humanity.
It's like they're two sides of the same coin, you know,
yeah,
reflecting these different facets of God's image.
Exactly.
But together, they make a complete whole.
I love that analogy. And that partnership, that shared responsibility, that creativity between man and woman, it's like woven into creation itself, you know.
It really is. But as we all know, things kind of go sideways in Genesis 3.
Yeah.
With the serpent and the fall. That's a whole other deep dive. Maybe sometime down the road. Who knows? But before we get there, let's think about everything we've learned from Genesis 1 and 2. We've covered a lot of ground. As a listener, what stands out to you? What do you think about these ancient texts, especially in light of the scientific discoveries we've talked about?
There is so much to think about, isn't there?
I mean, one of the things that struck me is that faith and science don't have to be enemies, right?
Right.
Dr. Phillips's approach shows us that we can embrace the wonder of scientific exploration.
Absolutely.
But still hold on to the truth of God's word.
I think it requires a lot of humility and honesty on both sides.
Yeah.
But it's definitely a path worth exploring. It's like we have these two lenses, you know, the scientific one and the theological one.
Yeah.
Hold them up to creation and let them kind of illuminate and enrich each other.
I like that.
Yeah.
And in that process, you know, maybe we discover new depths of understanding, both about the universe and about God.
For sure.
Another thing that resonated with me was how much Genesis emphasizes the goodness of creation. It's repeated over and over again, and God saw that it was good, you know?
Yeah, it's powerful, isn't it? This affirmation.
It is.
Of how beautiful and valuable everything God made is.
Yeah.
You know?
It makes me think about our responsibility to care for creation.
Right.
To honor that goodness, even as we're facing all these environmental challenges today. And just to appreciate the incredible diversity and complexity of life, you know, from tiny little microorganisms to the vastness of space.
It's all connected, woven together by a creator who loves what he made.
And we, as image bearers, get to share in that delight, to be in awe of God's work.
And find our place
in
that huge tapestry of creation.
Speaking of image bearers, though, It makes you wonder if we're all reflections of the divine image. Mm-hmm. What does that say about how we treat each other?
That's such a crucial question.
Yeah.
If we truly believe that everyone bears God's image, mm-hmm. then dignity and respect.
Yep.
They're not just options.
Right.
They're absolutely necessary.
It really challenges us to see the inherent value in every single person, no matter their background, their beliefs, their circumstances.
Absolutely. And to actively fight injustice mm-hmm. and oppression, anything that dehumanizes others,
right.
that diminishes God's image in them.
It's a huge call to action.
It is.
And it's rooted in the very core of our faith.
Yeah. And it becomes even more important when we think about how broken the world becomes in the next chapter.
The fall and all of its consequences. But before we go there,
yeah.
maybe we can take a minute to consider this. How does understanding creation with all of its complexities and nuances, how does that shape your view of the world, of humanity's place in the world, and your relationship with God? It's a question we're thinking about as we keep going through Genesis.
It really is.
Yeah.
It really is.
It really is a question that I think we could spend our whole lives unpacking. It's amazing how these ancient texts can still make us think so deeply today, you know?
It really speaks to their power, I think, and how relevant they still are. Even as we learn more and more about the world, these stories, they still deal with these big questions about what it means to be human.
Our deep dive today has taken us from, like, the vastness of space to, like, the tiny details of ancient Hebrew.
It has.
We've seen these huge scientific discoveries that challenge how people have traditionally interpreted things.
Yeah.
And these theological concepts that make us really rethink what we thought we knew about God and humanity. I feel like we've only just, like, dipped our toes in the water.
And that's part of what makes it so great, right?
Yeah.
Genesis 1 and 2, they're like a jumping off point.
Yeah.
They send us off into these deeper waters to explore and reflect.
So if there's one thing that you really hope our listeners take away from this whole deep dive, mm-hmm. what would it be?
I think it would be this. The creation narrative, even though it's so old, it still speaks to us today. In our modern world, it invites us to wrestle with these huge questions about science and faith, the meaning of life, our place in all of this.
It's a story that's both super personal
yeah.
and universal at the same time. It connects us to something way bigger than ourselves.
Absolutely. And that's something to be excited about, even as we keep searching, keep questioning,
yeah.
and trying to understand more.
I love that. Well, this about wraps up our deep dive into Genesis chapters 1 and 2. We've covered so much, but I think the conversation definitely doesn't end here.
No, not at all.
So keep exploring, keep asking those questions, and let the words of Genesis, you know, keep sparking your imagination and challenge what you think you know.
Definitely.
And remember, how you understand creation really shapes how you see the world. So yeah. think about those big questions and figure out what these chapters mean to you. Until next time, happy diving.